Thank you all once again for coming to the Minneapolis Event Center. I'm Steve Seal from Minnesota Public Radio, and it is our pleasure once again to welcome you to Policy in a Pint. This is our first time here, as I said, to this wonderful new event. Very, very cool space. We're very appreciative of the kind folks here to welcome us. And thank you for coming out on a beautiful night. Of course, it is air-conditioned in here, which is very nice, and it's going to be much warmer, much, much warmer as we move through the week. Jay here in the middle will get to go back to being in from Grand Marais. What's the high going to be on Friday in Grand Marais?
I believe they said it was 63 on Friday.
Oh, my God, get out of here. All right. So, a couple of big thanks, as always. Thanks to the Citizens League for being our partner, some 11 years running here of Policy in a Pint. Exactly. And thank you again to Target for being our corporate sponsor of Policy in a Pint once again this year. We do appreciate their contributions to us. So we're calling tonight's program the New Young Leaders. Now, if that doesn't have much sort of punch to you, do consider this. We thought of calling this month's program the New Power Generation, but we did think for a moment, even though there might not be copyright lawyers exactly on top of that right now, that we thought better of it. So just know that we thought about it for about 5 minutes. So here's what we're talking about tonight. We hold this truth to be self-evident. People are really not into government right now. They're very disappointed in their government. The confidence in government is at an all-time low. And this year there's been there has been a groundswell, obviously, in involvement by younger people in issues. I think we can obviously witness the support of the Bernie Sanders movement and of involvement in the Black Lives Matter movement and things like that. And people are interested in being part of issues that matter to them. But as far as actually being involved in government itself, where does that stand? So I'm going to start here with a little statistic, or as we say down in Florida, statistic. So this is from the Washington Post. Millennials working in government are at their lowest levels in 5 years, new report finds. And that is really no surprise, right? This is actually an article that ran at the end of last year. But young people certainly couldn't be blamed for being discouraged, just as discouraged as the general population, disillusioned in government, right? Because not only has the inability to compromise sort of destroyed the ability of Congress to get anything done, and arguably the state legislative session that wrapped up in May didn't fare a lot better, but the millennials, whatever term you choose to use, millennials, Gen Y, are sort of uniquely screwed in the current environment, saddled with exorbitant student debt, curtailed possibilities and whatnot, unlike most generations that have preceded them. So it would be a discouraging time for anyone to step up and become involved in public service, but there is a new generation of leaders that are in fact doing just that despite these circumstances, and we wanted to talk with some of them about what inspired them to step up and the challenges that they face and the case that they might make, we're hopeful, for other young leaders to get involved as well. So with that tee off, I would like to introduce our guests, and I'll tell you a little bit more about Policy in a Pint, and we're going to get started here. So I'll start immediately to my left. Siapa Miranda serves as executive director for the St. Anthony Park Community Council, where she works collaboratively with neighborhood residents, the board of directors, staff, business owners, and local nonprofits to build a more visible, influential, and resilient community. In this position, she has achieved success in bridging the gap between neighbors and developers to secure affordable housing and a sustainable and innovative design in new developments in the neighborhood. She also serves on the board of directors for several other Minnesota nonprofits and organizations, including the Metropolitan Council Transportation Advisory Board, or TAB, which I may say TAB, and the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. And she is a graduate of the University of St. Thomas. Currently going, did you say, for a master's in policy at Metro State. Next is Jay Arrowsmith Deku. He is mayor of Grand Marais. He grew up in Medford, Minnesota, graduated from St. Olaf, moved to northern Minnesota to be a canoe guide in the Boundary Waters. Shortly thereafter, he discovered Northhouse Folk School in Grand Marais and served as an intern and then fledgling craft in the then fledgling craft hub. And slowly his relationship with Grand Marais started to grow until he found himself serving on the city's library board and bringing in speakers to give talks about some of the economic troubles in the area. He was elected mayor in November of 2014 and has since attempted to increase communication with the community and accomplish some much-needed projects, all the while extolling the virtues of this very unique little town on the Big Lake. As how many people have been to Grand Marais here? So we've all
yes.
know about, we know what Grand Marais
yes.
feels like.
I love it.
You know what a cool little town it is. So
I'm back anytime.
I was gonna say, I just wanted to make sure that we had a you know, like a general consensus of what the vibe of Grand Marais is like. Now, Grand Marais was voted coolest small town at some point by Outside Magazine. Is that right?
That wasn't Outside Magazine. That was Budget Travel.
Budget Travel. Well, never mind. Anyway.
So Budget Travel did the coolest small town thing. We won that last year, and then this year we were in the running for the best small town in Outside Magazine. We made it to the semifinals, where we got beat out by Ludington, Michigan.
Oh, man.
So if we ever get in there again, all of you need to vote.
A very respectable showing, though, nonetheless. Luke Hellier is running for city council in Lakeville.
He's been to Lakeville.
Lakeville. Hey, not bad. Thank you, Luke.
Yeah.
Thank you. So he brings an interesting perspective as a candidate who's not yet been elected, but who is currently involved in the process of getting his foot in the door of local political office. And we want to ask him what that's been like so far. Luke served as press secretary at the Minnesota State Republican Caucus and as a district outreach director for Congressman Eric Paulson. He's covered a range of policy issues, including taxes, trade, medical devices, energy, shooting sports, and health care for the congressman, also active in his community, and is a former chairman of the board of the Edina Lions Club, works as a delegation advisor for the YMCA's Youth in Government program, and many other things to his credit on his resume. A well-padded CV. And let's give a warm welcome to all of our guests for agreeing to be part of Policy in a Pint tonight. Thank you all for coming. So here's how it works. If you've not been to a Policy in a Pint, I'll chat with these kind folks for about a half an hour and then get your questions for about a half an hour. I hold the microphone. Thank you very much. And if you want to follow along on Twitter and ask questions that way, hashtag PolicyPint is the way to go on that. We are recording this for streaming on the web, but maybe, probably not for broadcast. We only broadcast these a few times. So if you accidentally swear, that's okay, I guess.
That's okay.
And that goes for me too, but I try not to. Okay, so I just kind of want to find out you guys' story. So, Siapa, let's start with you. What is your background? When did you start thinking about public service? And was there like a galvanizing event or issue that got you into it?
Not really. I mean, I guess like I had this, I guess at the time, maybe when I was about 18 or 19, I started working with youth. And it was a very stereotypical, like, I'm going to do something at the YWCA. I want to start volunteering and doing these things. And then it came from there to saying maybe about 24 or 25, saying, you know, some of these systems aren't working well, right? And I'm like, I ended up doing case management too, and I worked with actually felons for about 4 years and working with Ramsey County, and I just was like, this is not, like, if I ran things would be so much more different. Like, I know what I want to do, like, I see where the problem is, and I'm going to reconfigure this. But I was like, I'm just a case manager. Like, nobody gives a shit what I think, you know? And I think from there, it was definitely like, I'm going to start serving on boards, and I'm going to start. So I went to Minnesota Women's Consortium. I started going to League of Women Voters, and I said, hey, like, I want to be able to volunteer, and where does my opinion count? And started working on budgets, and from there, I was like, I feel like I'm getting ready to run an organization. I feel like if I was running things, like, things would be, like, I would be able to lay this out.
So you say nobody gave a tish. What you thought? Who's the nobody that you were?
So I guess the nobody that we're talking about was like my supervisor at the time. I was like, okay, we have all these programmings, but they're not doing anything. I feel like I'm pimping people. What's up with that, right? I was like, I'm a poverty pimp. Why do we have this system where we're constantly, you know, it's a revolving door of the same issues? So I started to create programming and wraparound programming. And I said, okay, like, we're here to, like, work with you to making sure that you've, you know, if there's a domestic situation that we're getting these pieces handled. If it's about work, let's make sure that you were rewriting your resume for the next 3 months, you know. And it was great to see people after 6 months to be able to get a sustainable job, that you're able to, you know, hold your household together or be able to move out of the neighborhoods that you really didn't care for in the first place of living there. So that was a positive piece. But I also had my supervisor at the time, she goes, you know, Suyapa, you know, I can't help to see that people aren't coming back to you. And I said, oh, I thought that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? And she goes, no, well, if you do that, they don't return. And I was like, we don't want them to return. We want to build in the skill set and for you to be able to advocate for yourself. Isn't that what this is all about? And she said, no, that's not what this is all about. And you need to make sure that we're not helping people so much that they're not coming back. And I thought, this is crazy. You're a crazy person. That's not what I'm about.
That's surreal. That's really weird. Well, good for you. I mean, that would seem to be the logical response, wouldn't it? I mean, wow, I'm kind of gobsmacked by that too. Okay, now I want to circle back to that.
Sure.
and find out what the next part of the story then was for you after you had those realizations that you wanted to then do more. So Jay, how was it that you found yourself actually running for mayor of Grand Marais? Now there's a lot that you do. You run a bed and breakfast. You've been involved in all these various things. You're like Mr. Super Extreme Runner guy. And somehow you find time to be the mayor of Grand Marais as well. So you guys are all astonishing to me, by the way, for the amount of plates that you have spinning. But so how did you decide that you were actually going to run for mayor?
Well, it was a cold night in 1982. And,
oh, my God.
No, it was totally by accident. I mean, really. How it started was being on the library board in my community. Grand Marais is one of the places, if you guys have been there, you know that. If you've been to the library, I should say, we have a 5-star library in Grand Marais, which means that it utilizes more resources than the people in our community could like reasonably use. So we have 77,000 circulations in our library in our community of 1,500 people. So that's a pretty good library. So I got involved with that because it's something I really cared about. And then it just kind of built on top of it from there. I started seeing some of the problems that existed in the budgeting process from the library to the city. And through a vacancy on the county commission, a bunch of my friends kind of were like, hey, you know what, you should run for county commissioner, which I had no interest in doing whatsoever. But then after a while, I thought, you know, that's probably not a terrible idea. So I started looking more into it, started talking to more people, and some very wise advisors told me that it's probably not the place right now. Why don't you start at the city level, and we'll go from there. Nobody had shown any interest in being mayor, by the way, at this point. And so then I put my name in, and I just said, let's go for broke. And I did actually have somebody running against me when it came push come to shove. But it was a vacancy, you know. There was a leadership vacancy, basically, and so me stepping into that position took very little concerted effort. I mean, I spent a lot of time talking to people about things, but it took very little concerted effort. And I think I spent about $20. So
good for you.
So you can work on that.
Wow.
See what you can get your bang for
see
your buck.
See how if you can work on $20,
yeah,
Luke.
I've seen
okay.
That already.
Okay. Now we're gonna. I want to come back and I'm gonna find out how the election went and then what it's been like so far. So Luke, what has moved you to want to get into city council in Lakeville?
Yeah, good question. You know, I first got interested into civics and public policy. Probably in eighth grade or ninth grade, and my civics teacher told me, Luke, you talk too much, so you should join youth in government. And I said, what is that? She said, well, it's this program. There's 1,500 kids from across Minnesota, from Brainerd to St. Cloud and Albert Lea, and they bring in some kids from Hudson. And you debate policy issues at the state level for a weekend every year at the Capitol, and you should do that and stop talking in class. And I said, that's a really good idea. And so I went for my first year. I loved it. And I wanted to know more about politics and how you know, laws were made in Minnesota, so I volunteered to work on the campaign of my state legislator. And I've now known her for 15-plus years, and she's on the county commission now, and I helped her on that campaign, and that's kind of where I got into politics. And when it came to Lakeville City Council, you know, there was going to be a vacancy. One of the council members is running for mayor this year. And he, we met, and he asked me to run or to consider running. And my wife and I thought about it for a while and decided to pull the trigger. So I really care about my city. You know, my wife and I are both from Lakeville, and after college, we moved away and lived in Edina for 6 years. but we chose to move back to Lakeville, and we wanted to raise our kids there. And the community just meant a lot to us. And I saw some things that Edina did very poorly. Sorry if anybody lives in Edina. When it came to infrastructure, and I want to make sure that Lakeville's a younger community, as how it's been around, that they don't make the same mistakes.
Okay. So questions now. I want to know what some of those things are, but we'll circle back to you. So Siapa, what flash forward to today, and you're now on the city council at in St. Anthony Park, and I'm sorry.
Community council.
Excuse me. Right. And so what has been your experience so far? You're the first citizen member? Do I have that terminology right?
That's actually a different gig. That's for the Taffer-Met Council.
Oh, that's for the Taffer-Met Council. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
So that's
I've gotten confused.
So talk
about being on the community council for St. Anthony Park, and what was there any sort of you know, culture shock that you encountered at first that was, you know, a sort of old guard who thought and did things a certain way, and you came in and thought, you've got to be kidding me.
So, absolutely. I was 33 years old. I was coming into executive director position, and I never held a position like that before. And beyond that, we had a executive director who'd been there for about 13 years. And she demoted herself as director in our organization, which I did not know until a little later on. But going through the motions, I was just starstruck, though, too. I was like, what's going on, or what do we have to do, and what are the issues, and where am I falling in line in all of this, you know? And the biggest things that we were doing back then were kind of just getting along together and doing these potlucks, and it was all just happy and great, and we're doing pats in the back, and we're like, who's the greatest council? And you're like, yay, it's us. And and I said, you know, I was actually the first person of color they ever hired, and we've been there open since 1972. And it just really struck me. And I mean, our neighborhood was concerned, and not our whole neighborhood, but we had a lot of older folks that were on our board, and they were nervous. And they said, here's this 33-year-old kid. What does she know about anything? And I'm like, I've served on boards for the last 10 years, you know? I actually have an immense experience and skill set kind of walking into this.
Do you know about pep rallies? Like sitting around and saying, yay, we're great. Could you do that?
It was really tough for me because I looked around and I was like, we're not great. I don't know what's going on, but like, we're not great. I said, for us to be great means for us to really talk about the disparities that are happening in our community. Oh my gosh, like why we have a board that's completely, you know, we have them 40, 50 and up crowd that are all white and mostly men. And I'm like, you know, there's, I'm sure, more diversity here in our district, and we want to make sure to even include renters in some of the processes that we're creating. So we went into this large, like, strategic planning piece, and I said, it's really time for this council to find out who we are as a council, to really get some vision and to get some strategy and what is our values, to what do we value the most. So it was really about questioning who we are as an organization.
So what's a specific issue that you wanted to, that's like, you know, came to top of mind at first that you thought, this is not being addressed at all and I want to get this on the table?
First thing was equity. You know, that was like our biggest deal. When I walked in, I said, we have a community council, but we're not running equitable. And I said, that's not healthy. And I said, we know that there's disparities here, but we're not addressing them. And I said, are we not supposed to be advocates for this community? That's what I thought the charge here is for, not just making potlucks and telling us each other how great we are, but saying, like, what are we here to do? So one of the first things, well, there's several different things that happened around that same time, too. Working with developers, you know, and I said, that's our leverage point. You know, you want a letter of recommendation, and we really want to give that to you, but what are you going to give to us today? And they're like, that's not how this works yet. And I said, sure it is. We're going to do this, right? I said, you know, we want to see affordability, or we want to see some sustainability. Let's see if we can lower, you know, the footprint on here. And they were like, well, know that your city council person says it's a great program, and they like it. And I was like, I'm not city council today, so did you already get a letter of support of them? And if you did, that's illegal.
So you said, we want affordability, but this is something that had not been a value that you felt had been embraced
No,
by
absolutely
by the community
not.
Council.
When I came in there, it was really just saying, hey, there's a developer in place, and they need a letter of support. And we said, all right, cool. We're going to get that letter for you, and that's it.
Okay. All right, so now, Jay, talk to me about what, if there was things that surprised you about, first of all, I do want to find out about this election. So you ended up having an opponent.
I did have an opponent.
How did you do in the election?
He was a 63-year-old man who had lived in Grand Marais for a long time, and he made it very apparent that he was 63. Like, that was one of the things when we had our debate. He like made sure that that was out there. I'm 63.
This was an asset in his mind.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe he was playing it. I don't know. I don't know what his end game was with that. But he was a little bit of a kooky character around town. But
to be fair, not because he was 63, but because he was okay.
But I ended up with about 69% of the vote, which was pretty good, considering that there were a great number of people who wrote in just ridiculous names and things like that. But this is Grand Marais; it's a community of artists. You never know.
Did lizard people make it onto the ballot?
No, I think Homer Simpson was there.
Homer Simpson. So, okay, now. You're entering into this position, and once again, we have a young person who is in your early 30s, right? And was there any sort of culture shock that you encountered of people thinking, as Suyapa was saying, what does this guy know?
Well, in Grand Marais, there's a couple of different groups of folks, you know? There's the folks that have lived there since before time, and then there's the people that have moved up there relatively recently, who may as well have moved up there yesterday. So a lot of the folks that have lived up there since before time, they saw this as a travesty. They thought that this was what in the world is going on in our community. We've finally lost the mayor, you know, that kind of a thing. I may be exaggerating a little bit, but there were quite a few folks that that thought that this was a really bad deal. And my response to that basically was like, I'm here all the time. Let's have a cup of coffee. Let's talk. Let's see what happens. I run into these guys at the grocery store. I run into them at the post office. It's not a big town. Sometimes you run into people like 3 or 4 times a day because you're all on the same route for running your errands, and there's not that many shops you can go to. So then if you like start a conversation at one place, you can keep it going throughout the course of the day. And since then, I'm really pleased to say that people have started talking to me. So a lot of the people that have been there forever, their families that have been there forever have called me and have, you know, initially when I answer the phone and they say, this is Donnie Brazell. And I say, oh my God, it's Donnie Brazell. You know, because he doesn't have a reputation for being a terribly nice guy. And then he lays down, this is what I'm looking for. This is what's wrong. What can we do about it? Well, I don't know if we can do anything about it. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out what we can do. And then we get down to something, at least pay attention to what they're saying, at least follow through on the things that they're saying are wrong, And then you know, maybe we can find some kind of a compromise or a solution to it.
All right, so then give me an example of what the generational divide would be in this case. What's an issue?
Development. How about development? Let's start with development. Can we start with development? So development is a bad word in Grand Marais. A lot of people feel like development is going to make Grand Marais into a bigger city. It's going to make it into something that it's not. It's going to take away the small town charm. It's going to take away the roots in the lumber and the fishing industries, and it's going to change that environment to be something that no one will enjoy. And that is, I believe, completely the wrong tack to be taking at all. I think that we can't fully enjoy our heritage if we don't have pride in what we're doing right now, right? I mean, does that make sense? I think that makes sense. So if we aren't doing new things in our community right now, and if we aren't taking pride in the things that we're doing, then who cares what happened in the past? Because nobody's going to be enjoying themselves anyway. And the people who live there are not going to have a high standard of living. So it doesn't matter. So lumber and fishing is a big thing to remember and to immortalize, but you got to do something with that. So we've been working on redeveloping some of the city's assets. We had an old ski hill on the bluff behind the city. I don't know if you guys remember that, but there's a great big bluff behind the city. That used to be a ski hill, and it's not a ski hill anymore, and nothing has been done with it for 50 years. So now we're starting to develop that. We've applied for consideration to be considered regionally significant for that chunk of land so that we can develop it into a nature center. Because you know what? People should enjoy that resource. And we have to spend some time doing that. And we have to create some amenities so that people can live there. Because younger people who want to live in communities want to have stuff to do. And in Grand Marais, there's not that much stuff to do. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to do, but not a lot of stuff to do.
Well, I think what's interesting is that there seemed to be a kind of intrinsic fear that because you were young, there was some danger of something being disrupted.
That I was irresponsible. I mean, that was largely what it was, that I have no experience and I have no idea and I'm not going to be careful and we're going to blow all kinds of city money.
And because you were young, there was going to be a McDonald's and a Gap. I mean, is that...
Maybe. I don't dress like the Gap.
No, well, exactly, but I guess... If there was a fear of somehow the small town charm being disrupted, and you represented and they were afraid of you because you were young and ostensibly irresponsible, then I guess that's what I'm sort of making the connection. Maybe it's not.
I think
there,
they felt that I just didn't know the community.
Okay.
That I was not in with the community. I didn't understand what was happening in the community, and I mean, given I don't have generational knowledge or institutional knowledge of that, I have more now than I did 2 years ago. But what I did know is I did know what it was like to be virtually homeless in my own community, and I did know what it was like to work several part-time jobs in order to be able to support myself, and I did know what it was like to wait tables at the Angry Trout and to do all of these other jobs that are jobs that you do if you're just barely squeaking by, and that's a lot of people in Grand Marais that live like that.
So, Luke, describe for me what would be an example of a generational divide. First of all, do you want to talk about what it was that you saw as being?
So just infrastructure. I lived on an older street in Edina. The homes were built in the 50s, and three times in 6 years living there, the water main broke in front of our house. So the first year we had about an inch of standing water. And the last time was the day our house went on the market, so it cost us $2,500 to have our yard dug up while our sign was going up. So, and that's just because they didn't take the time over the last 50 years to keep their infrastructure up. They had really old pipes, and it's happened all over the city. And, you know, that was something I want to make sure that Lakeville doesn't do. So that's just one issue that came to mind.
What is it about... are there things in Lakeville specifically that you feel that aren't being addressed that you would address if you, you know?
No, that's a good question. I think, you know, right now we're at a kind of a turning point for the city. You know, we had a ton of growth right before the recession. It all basically stopped in 2009, 2010, and in the last year or so has really picked up steam again. Lakeville right now has the most single-family home permits out in the city, in the state. So there's like 55 homes being built right now. They just approved a whole bunch more. And they keep saying, they, right, Met Council, whoever, we'll be the third largest city in the metro by 2030. So as somebody that grew up there, and my in-laws are there, and my parents are there, I wanted to be able to reflect the small town, even though it's 55,000 people, but continue to grow and thrive and create a community that my folks can stick around and my in-laws can stick around, but young families are attracted to want to live there too.
Okay.
And that's really important.
Now, what about the approach of someone going into government or in government in their 30s might be a different kind of governing as opposed to someone who is more of a public service lifer? You know? Are there things that you would employ, stances that you would have about things that somebody who is in their 60s simply couldn't have? This is not going to, yeah. I don't want this to degenerate into an ageist thing, which is really not the intention of this. I just want to find out the things that a younger person can bring to this kind of service.
Lakeville is interesting. We have a young mayor. We're actually the same age, and he was elected when he was in his late 20s. Half the people in the city love him. The other half hate him. So I don't know how that's going to turn out for me. We're not the same politically, but that's an age thing. I think it's really important for, you know, the under 35, under 40 crowd to listen to people from different generations. I'll give you an example. When I worked for Congressman Paulson, we would go around to different events, Lions Club, Rotary Club, whoever, right? Typically 60-plus crowd. So when I joined the Edina Lions, you know, the average age was 80, and I brought it down to 40. So, which, I mean, and now that I have kids, I understand why, because it's super hard to do that stuff when you have kids. But anyway, so we were at a meeting, and there was a woman there from a local food shelf group, and she just got up and said, hey, we deliver food to seniors, and we can't accept their EBT card. We can only take cash. It's against the law. And so we can't serve half the people that need to be served. And we thought, that is crazy. Long story short, after over a year, we worked with Colin Peterson's office, a Democrat from the western part of the state, and had to change the law in the farm bill so that some seniors in the Twin Cities could get groceries delivered to their house. So really listening to understand what the issues are from all generations is really important.
Siapa, what about your approach might be considered a different kind of governing than someone who's an older public servant?
I guess the first thing that comes to mind is the words that came from my predecessor. And she, when I came through, I said, okay, we're going to reach out to communities that we haven't reached out to, and we're going to make a big push. And she looked at me and said, we've done that before. It doesn't work. And I think that that is like, I came in with this energy and I said, you know what, we're going to change the world today. And I'm really excited about it. And we're going to do it today. And this is going to be amazing. And she was like, we did it. And
oh,
it never
the things
worked.
You don't know.
Well, no, or to think, you know, it was like, you know, we tried to reach out to them, you know, throughout the years, and they're just not interested, and you just need to be okay with that. And I was like, what does that really mean? How did we reach out? Like, I want to be able to do this on my own. And it was just, but it was definitely that pushback that said, we've done it, and there's nothing that we can be done. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do it anyway, because that's how I am. Okay. And we did. I mean, I said, for our community council, it's time for our community council to go to community. Let's stop telling people, you know, you have to be at these meetings. If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. It's okay. Let's move our venue then. That's what we need to do. We can't assume that people are going to always come out to us. Especially we had a community, too, that was had a lot of disabilities. You know, people in wheelchairs, people with mental illness. That was literally right across the street from the council. And I was like, there's that building right there. Like, we should try to do something about that, right? Because I'm sure they have some serious concerns, but it's really tough to come out to these meetings. And thinking about the meeting times, too, it's always at 7 o'clock. We don't know what time people are working at. It's not exactly at the times when everybody is able to come through.
So that also brings to mind, because I want to get your answer on this as well, Jay, but this also brings to mind, you know, Is this a really common phenomenon of people sort of like when you encounter people who have been in political life for some number of years and they're just like, oh, I just can't wait to disabuse you of your notions of optimism. You know, is this a common phenomenon? Did this happen to you, Jay?
Well, I'm pretty resistant to that. I'm pretty stalwart in what I'm thinking. So I try and resist that as much as possible, but it certainly does happen. We were having a conversation right at the beginning. We were talking about how people reacted to me when I got elected mayor, and you know, there was a lot of like, oh, that's cute. Like that kind of a thing, but not a lot of serious conversation. And then I started throwing policy at them, and then they were like, well, wait a minute, whoa. You're not supposed to do that. And I was like, well, I am supposed to do that, and guess what? I'm going to keep doing it, so you better wake up. Status quo is a really powerful thing in local governments, and that's one of the things, I will tell that to every single one of you people in this room. Status quo is incredibly powerful, and it is not that hard to break it. But what you've got to do is you've got to talk to the people who represent you. You've got to do that. And people don't feel comfortable doing that.
Okay, now you've hit upon something just absolutely key to this, which strikes me that status quo is really powerful potentially in all government. But what I wonder is it easier to break in local government?
No. Well, I mean, easier to break in local government than what?
Easier to break through.
I mean, oh, to break through in local government than like in federal or state government
in
or something
Congress.
Like that? Well, we can actually get stuff done in local government.
That's what I'm getting at, exactly.
So, I mean, I remember I read this article that said that if you want to change policy in your area, don't even mess with your federal and state representatives. Go to your local reps, because your local reps are the ones that do it. They're the ones that live it. They're in your community. They know you. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. It totally makes sense. It's one of the reasons why I have no interest in going higher than mayor, because I want to know the people I'm representing. I want to know these people, because if I don't, then it becomes an abstraction. When it becomes an abstraction, you're not as useful. You're not as effective.
I'm interested to start to take you guys' questions, so please be thinking of what questions you've got. Do you have any to start off with here? What kind of ways has technology seriously, now this is what I want to know. How has technology played a part in changing the way something is done, or have you blown anybody's minds with technology in ways that it hasn't occurred to anyone that maybe something could be done more easily?
We redid the website for the city. It hadn't been redone since like the 90s.
Nice.
It was pretty ridiculous. It was totally useless. And when we had the conversation about redoing the website for the city, it was like pulling teeth. Because, again, there was this status quo thing. Well, if you start doing that.
I can tell you this. I have no credit. I can't take credit for this. But I do know in Lakeville, up until two and a half years ago, every Friday the council members get a packet. It's everything that's going around in town. And it was up to whoever the police sergeant was on duty on Fridays to drive around to all the council members' homes and hand them the packet, you know, like officially on paper.
Oh, my God.
We had a new city administrator, and now it's electronic. So, I mean, there's really cool things happening in our town.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. And I bet there's, you know, a whole bunch more of those. Okay, first question.
Jay, how do you think that coming into a community as an outsider and changing the culture is done in a constructive way, as it's obviously an issue that people are opposed to?
Well, there's got to be some education. You got to know your community. And the best way to know your community is to get involved in something. So, and what I've discovered and what I've told most of the young people who have been moving to Grand Marais is that you've got to find your thing. Find your thing, stand up for it, and then you'll know that community. And then through that community, you'll start getting a perspective on the rest of it. You got to have that perspective before you try and change anything. Because if you just jump in and you want to, like, say, I'm going to take daycare and I'm going to revolutionize daycare in your community, well, what does that entail? You know, those kinds of things. I spent the first year and a half, basically, of being mayor, like, basically just figuring out what was going on. And looking back through all the old studies that happened in Grand Marais, all the old conversations, what happened with the marina? Wasn't there going to be a marina? You know, like that sort of thing. And learning about all this institutional history that people who've lived there for 25, 30, 60, 120 years, that they have that stuff. We have a couple guys. There's one guy who has a free pass to the YMCA because he's 99.
Good for him.
And they said that you don't have to pay. He comes every night and sits in the hot tub. Every night I think he's going to have a heart attack.
Keeps him young.
Oh, my God. Okay, next question.
Leadership often involves or sometimes involves making very difficult decisions that fly in the face of public sentiment. Could you talk about the instances or instance where you've run across something that you felt very strongly about, but you knew was not going to be popular? It might be unpopular enough to want to throw you out of office or be socially ostracized or any number of other negative things.
Great question. So that'll be for either you, Jay, or you, Siapa. And if you can think of one,
I'll tell you on
that
January
you'd like
5th.
To propose, Luke. Yeah, yeah, when we're done. Okay.
So, I mean, I guess the first things that come into mind is like, I'll just say this straight out. When I came in, I was like, I want everybody to like me. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to have everybody like me, and I know that, and that's okay. But we're going to bring on more new people onto this, and they're going to be okay for the things that we're doing. But that second piece is I needed to pick and choose my battles. I can't take every single thing and be like, that's completely wrong. We're not going to do it that way. I'd be like, let's think about that. We're gonna have an ad hoc committee at this point, and we're going to talk about that. Because we did have an older community in St. Anthony Park, right? And what are we going to do with that? And I can't take away the institutional memory of what we have done. I have to be able to honor that and value that, and then also bring in the new ideas and really try to, I hate to say this, like massage the situation of how we can kind of navigate this through. Because I'm going to need your input, and I need my stakeholders to be behind me and going through the strategy of how we're going to manage this from now on. So, I mean, definitely, getting people to question themselves was a big deal.
Jay? You want to go first, Luke? Because I want to hear about something that, if you have to do anything that has made you unpopular.
Well, so early, thank God. I mean, I will say, I'm on a committee for the school buildings, and I don't know if it's necessarily unpopular, but they first started this facilities committee with no parents on the board. It was teachers, member of teachers union, people from the administration, right? So there are no parents. And besides the fact, there's not a single person on the Lakeville School Board that has kids in the school district anymore. So I emailed and said, look, you guys have to have some parent input. And they said, well, I don't know, it might be full. But then a month later, they came back and said, hey, we'll have parents on board. And it's nice to have that input, so it's not controversial yet, but it might be.
Well, the one thing that jumps to my mind right away is this spring, early this spring, like in January or February, word came to the council that there was a new development that was planned. It was a Dollar General store, which is a 9,000 square foot discount retail store that was planning on building right inside the city limits on the top of the hill. And so the community just freaked out, like literally freaked out. There was a petition that was started. I don't know if you guys saw that. It ended up in the Star Trib. But there were thousands upon thousands of signatures on this petition. So we called it a special meeting of the city council to deal with this.
And now they freaked out, Jay, because why?
Well, there were two sides of the freakout. One side of the freakout was everybody was like, oh my God, this is going to kill our town. And the second side was, oh my God, this is awesome. Because, and hear me out here, this took a while for me to get through this, and it was actually a humongous growing moment for me, because my first response was like, hell they are! You know, like, they're not going to build a Dollar General in Grand Marais, like, that's stupid. But you also, like, I'm bound by rules that I have to follow, and the rules that I have are the rules that I've inherited. Like, I did not make these rules, but I still have to follow these rules. That's part of the oath that you take when you take office. And so we had the special meeting. We had 100 people there, which is unheard of for a town of 1,300 in the middle of the winter. And, yeah, nobody wants to come out. And they 98 of them said, this is a terrible idea. You got to do something to stop this. And then two of them said, hey, I live at the poverty line, man. anything that makes my stuff cheaper is good.
Right.
And so then we had the special meeting. We had a city council meeting at the next Wednesday, so 2 days away. And then we had more people show up who were the low-income people in town who said, hey, it's hard to live here, man. Like, anything that'll make it easier for us, it's not a bad thing. We ended up passing what's considered an interim ordinance that limited the scope of development in the area that they wanted to develop so that it made it a little bit more onerous for them to develop. The developers, like we predicted, were not willing to put in the effort to make that development happen, so they walked. And in doing that, we had a moment of crying success, and then we also had this community that has been ignored in our community by the people who've developed the art scene, by the craft scene, the tourism scene, all this stuff. The people that work in the service industry, that live at the poverty line, felt again like they had been shat upon. And I think, I don't know if you get to bleep that one or not, but that was a huge changing moment for me. And right now we've started a process of comprehensive planning in the community so that we can actually make a plan for the future. And I'm so excited to say that we have four of the representatives on the steering committee for that are people who are low income. And that is where we need to start. We need those people to come and look at our policies and say, what the heck? Like, this doesn't help me. This isn't helping me at all. So what can you do to help it to help me?
I have a question I'm going to take over here, but I have one that I want to circle back on really quick, and that is that why is local government, we were talking about local government as the more effective level. Why is local government more effective than government the higher up on the food chain that you go?
Because it's not a career, right? So the people that serve are doing it because they care about the community. It's not, you're not in Washington, D.C. making $170,000 a year. You're in your town and you show up one day a week for a city council meeting.
Is that the main reason, you guys, you think?
I definitely think it's about what you can see today, right? I think when you have local government, you're going to be like, okay, we're going to do this project, and you can see it, and then we're going to see it next year. And higher up level government, it's so tough because you're like, okay, they said something was going to change, but when is that going to happen? Oh, it's been a few years. I thought something was going to happen. Nothing happened.
Jay?
Yeah, well, it's philosophy versus pragmatism. You know, I mean, one of the projects that we've worked on is getting a new public works facility built. They've been talking about that for 20 years. And we finally, like, the council was just like, we're going to do this, okay? So we called our engineer and said, get us some plans. We'll build this thing. At the higher levels that you deal, they deal a lot more with concepts. They deal a lot more with, like, what is the idea behind this? And also, like I said before, there's an abstraction of who they're representing. Like, who the heck are you representing? I'm representing Donnie Brazell. You know, I mean, and that's, and a bunch of other people. But a lot of those, like the higher ups, it just gets harder. It gets harder as you get bigger to represent an entire community of people when the community of people spans, like our district for state representative goes from International Falls to Grand Portage. Like that includes three Native communities and the Iron Range and the North Shore. Like there's no way all those people think the same thing.
So then how does partisanship manifest in these kind of micro environments then? It can't be in the way that it does on the big stages then, right? I mean, well, first of all, most city councils or community councils are designed to be nonpartisan,
right.
I guess, right?
Right.
So you can be what's the word? Endorsed by a political party in the case of like St. Anthony Park is part of St. Paul, right? But it's not supposed to function as a partisan body, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no party ID on the ballot. So in Lakeville, both political parties will recommend candidates for the school board and city council and mayor that they like, or and that's kind of their own little universe. But it's not as big of a deal, and you know, it's not like St. Paul where if you get the DFL endorsement, there's a primary and. It's not like that.
Okay, our next question.
All right, I'm just curious because you came into public office, say, in your 20s or in your 30s versus in your 40s or 50s. my broad question is, what's next? What's next on your horizon? Obviously not running for higher office for some, but what's next?
I got to get to November. I'll just let you guys stew on it. And Lakeville's a really interesting town. You know, we're a small town, but we're almost 60,000 people. We don't have a primary, so the filing doesn't even close for my race until mid-August. So I don't really know who my opponents are yet. There could be 10, there could be 2. So we'll see. And I'll tell you on January 5th.
All right, next question.
What advice do you have for someone who's in their late 20s, early 30s that wants to get involved in local government?
Yeah, that was going to be my big end question. That's awesome.
I'm just going to jump in really quick. So join a board. They're always looking for people to be on the Planning Commission or the Transportation Committee. So I really got into this local government thing a year ago. I was appointed to the Dakota County Planning Commission. And so we really focus on parks and trails and some development of roads. So if you live in Dakota County and you're mad about Lebanon Hills, that is over. But I'll talk about other issues in Dakota County. In fact, we have 2 open seats. So if you live in Hastings or anywhere south of Dakota County, we're looking for somebody for the Planning Commission. So let's put a plug in.
I totally agree. I totally agree with what he said. There's a lot of other ways other than jumping on a board, though. The jumping on a board is probably the best way to get the understanding of the structure of the city government, because then you understand, like, what the relationships are between the departments, and then you can understand a little bit more of like, why would you want to be on the city council? Like, what is your actual impact? What would your impact be on the city council? A lot of people have really good ideas, but you have to figure out where those ideas have their home. Like, what is that point? That's why I jumped in the library board, because the library board was where I felt at home. I really felt good about the community education, about making resources available to people, and that's just continued as I've gone onto the city council, because then now we can put policies in place that support the library and support. We just opened a business incubator as well in Grand Marais. So I mean, like, these are good things.
The first thing is just becoming aware of where you live and like what's going on and what are some of the trends that are happening. I think the awareness is a huge deal. And I mean, definitely just, you know, we talk about the boards, but also what are you passionate about? Is it women's rights? What do we want to do with that? What do we want to change? And what do you want the world to look like, I guess, in the future?
So given your experience, what do... Maybe this is quixotic, but what do the dysfunctional levels of government need to do to start to govern better?
I think they need to start listening.
Okay.
So that's like a big deal to me, is like, I don't always feel listened to in certain spaces. And I think that, especially with the younger crowd, like, I think it's always that bigger idea, like, they don't know what they're talking about. Or we used to even have people in our committees on boards say, hey, affordability is not a thing. We don't need that. And I was like, when is the last time you rented? 1962? And I was like, that's a really long time ago. I don't know if you know what the rents look like right now. But they're like $1,000 for a studio. Does that look affordable to you?
No. Yeah, I know.
And then people, that's ridiculous. Seriously, and they're like, no. Yeah. And they were like, I have an apartment right now, I'm paying $700, and we've been paying that for the last 25 years. I'm like, guess what? The world isn't just your apartment. It's much more and bigger than that.
Jay?
You bring up so many stories. The former mayor actually had a conversation with me. I used to live in a yurt. Does anybody know what a yurt is?
Yeah.
Yeah! Well, I used to live in a yurt.
Community
I didn't
tonight.
Have
I didn't
any
that.
Running water or any electricity. Because I couldn't afford a house in Grand Marais. So I was sitting down and talking to the former mayor, and she said, it's never been easier for people to buy a house. And I just looked at her with a blank face, and I was like, you're not 29. I mean, a 29-year-old trying to buy a house, it's like pulling teeth. It's terrible. So being connected to the challenges of the people that you're trying to represent. And, you know, it's challenging for us to look forward and represent folks that are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, because we haven't been there, but it's a lot easier for us to assume what that's like. I think, than it is for people who are in those positions to look back and remember what it's like when they were 30 and then adjust that to all the changes that have happened in the world since they were 30. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean to older folks here. I just think that that's asking a lot of people to do that. And there are some really great legislators out there who can do that. And those folks are incredible champions for doing things right. It's just that's a big, big thing. And when you're not doing it as a career politician, you know, you don't have a ton of time to put into it. So sometimes you may not do the best job.
I think, you know, if you're going to look at the state level, I think money in politics is I don't have an answer. I'm just saying, observing, I live in the number one competitive district in the Twin Cities. Both candidates will raise the maximum, which is around $70,000. And then another $1 million from unions and business groups is going to get dumped into the race. So for both Lindsay and Roz, basically anything they do on their own personal is like spitting into the wind. And so for them to even be able to talk about what they want to do is almost impossible, because you have the gun control people coming in and dumping money, and you have the NRA dumping money. And so for them to be able to just talk about themselves is so difficult. And I don't know if you can have that conversation at that level. Local, it's different. Half the time you spend educating the voter. You know, I talked to somebody at the Lakeville parade, and they're like, so what do you think about Brexit? And I said, well, it's just a little out of my jurisdiction.
Fortunately, you don't really have to, at your level, at that level, yeah. You don't have to think too much about it.
So, but, you know, that's just, again, listening is just super important. And you know, it's just the nice thing at the city level, you know, we have ordinances that we have to pass a budget. We can't just keep pushing things off like they do in Congress. So part of it is, by law, you have to balance your budget. So that helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Things have to get done.
Things have to get
and
done.
And it's the places where things actually get done.
For as much as the state legislature, you know, they're really doing this year, it's because really they didn't have to, because they already passed their budget. They already met their constitutional obligations. So the rest of it was just, you know, playing around this last year. But it seemed like nothing happened because they didn't really have to. So
I want to thank our guests for being here tonight. Can we give them a big round of applause? Thank you so much again for coming out. This program will be archived online if you want to follow hashtag Policy Pint. I'm sure the conversation can and will continue. And check in on The Current at thecurrent.org. That's where the audio will get posted soon if you want to listen to it again. And I do hope that this conversation has spurred some ideas and some inspiration for you. So thanks so much, as always, for coming out. I've got a couple of thanks. Thanks to Target for continuing to be our corporate sponsor. Thanks to the Citizens League, once again, 11 straight years of being our partner at Minnesota Public Radio and The Current for Policy and a Pint. Sean Kershaw and Pahua Hoffman, Jan Unstead from the Citizens League, from Minnesota Public Radio, Jane Soliger, my producer, and also thanks to Matt Perkins from The Current. And thanks to the Minneapolis Event Center for hosting us tonight. Been wonderful hosts, and hope we can come back and be with you again. I'm Steve Seal, and we'll see you next time. Thanks so much.